Winters in Forest Grove were a nightmare. Mountains of snow cleared from the pavement of Highway 619 rose on either side of the road like crusty glaciers, half ice, half mud. Trees would bow their heads beneath the weight of daggers which formed downward as the waters froze and seemed to dare those husky old giants to stand beneath their load. The sky was an ashen gray, seldom black with North storm clouds, and yet the sun had seemingly taken a sabbatical until spring. The mood in Forest Grove, as the calendar's pages surfaced the word November, usually began to reflect the starkness of the wintry season as well. Farms began to shut down in frustrated hibernation. The little shops that lined the narrow center of town began to feel the loneliness of isolation as the townfolk withdrew into a cocoon of self-survival. And many an hour was spent huddled around old pot-bellied stoves waiting for what seemed like endless hours for the next customer to struggle through the door, shaking off mountains of powdered snow, muttering indistinguishable groans about the severity of this icy blast. And so you see, the town became little pockets of disgruntled Scrooges, cloistered around mechanical heating devices which seemed to produce the only warmth generated, for none seemed to come from the people. Tourists passing through would do so as fast as they could because they didn't want that pall of gloom that so covered this community to become contagious. Oh, they could find all the essentials in Forest Grove, groceries at Miss Ella's general store, hammers and saws and mixmasters at Richardson's Hardware. Drug items were available more or less on the dusty, dingy shelves of Grandpa Bill's drugstore right in the center of town. And you could grab a bite to eat at the Regal restaurant if your hunger had reached the desperation point. I mean, Regal it wasn't, but a restaurant it was. The Regal was owned and operated, you see, by Billy Simpson and his wife Elizabeth, with a bit of occasional unsolicited help from their two young children, Beth and Bobby. And, of course, the Regal was located next door to Grandpa Bill's drugstore, and that was no coincidence because, you see, Billy Simpson was Grandpa's boy and Beth and Bobby his only grandchildren. His grandpa, who owned that building that housed both the food that sometimes made you sick and the medicine that sometimes made you well. So you could find everything you needed in Forest Grove, everything that is except a smile or kind word. Smiles and kind words seemed to have been transported out of town with the last load of coal from the old mine down the hill. Even recent photos of family members on summer picnics looked like unsuspected snapshots taken by a hidden camera at a funeral. There was no joy in Forest Grove. Life just went on. It was as though the town folk were obligated to exist and just as obligated not to enjoy it. There was only one church in the town. It was pastored by a zealous young man who had been imported from upstate by the denomination to see if he could indeed perform a miracle and inject a little life into this catatonic flock. Thus far, all he'd injected were shockwaves. First, he had this neat idea. He started a youth choir, or he tried to. But a youth choir, he found out, was not a biblically acceptable tool of worship, not in Forest Grove. You see, Grandpa Billy didn't like youth choirs, and though the young Reverend Thompson was the shepherd of the flock, Grandpa Billy ran the show. He always had. He and his dad built the church out of rocks taken from the old stone quarry, and he'd been chairman of the Board of Deacons for the last 26 years, so if Grandpa didn't want a youth choir, those old stones in the church graveyard would be more likely to break forth in singing than the young people in Forest Grove. I mean, what Grandpa said was law, and he was so mean, breaking the law was the next thing to suicide. So the Reverend Tom tried his next stab at rejuvenation. He's tried to start a Wednesday night prayer meeting. All the successful big churches do it, he grinned. We can get to know each other better, and prayer never hurt anything, he said all too apologetically. But the deacons voted that down, too, on the basis that the Forest Grove Church had never prayed on Wednesday before, and they were about as successful as you could be. That was the reason they gave the Reverend anyway, but the real reason was Grandpa Bill's Domino Club met on Wednesday night, and no ministry, he said, could be more necessary to the community's welfare than that. That's religion in action, Grandpa philosophized. Well, few people would smirk at his unorthodox theology. No one would challenge him. So Reverend Tom just decided that rather than fight a losing battle, he'd retreat into his study and pray. Not such a bad idea, incidentally. It was on one of those icy cold mid-November afternoons when Reverend Tom was in his study that he heard a muffled knock on the door. He'd been studying and praying all day, and somehow his prayers had focused on one simple but profound request. He was asking God for one man, just one man, a man whose heart and soul literally beat for God. And that day in particular, he prayed specifically that God would send that man his way and at least let him know that there was such a person around. And while he was still praying, that knock came on the door. "This is my answer," the young pastor thought as he literally jumped to his feet and ran for the door. Only one obstacle stood between the racing reverend and the obvious answer to his prayers that he envisioned standing Bible in hand on his snow-covered doorstep. That obstacle was one half of a pair of roller skates, which happened to belong to his 6-year-old son, Timmy. As the impatient pastor rounded the corner from his study to the hallway, a most upsetting incident ensued. The reverend's left foot landed on the edge of the slippery skate, and with an absence of grace akin to an elephant on ice, his left foot went east, his right foot west, and his whole body went south, his shoulder careening on the corner of the coffee table as he came to the hardwood floor below. Now, there's not much a pastor can say on such an occasion, except perhaps to pray, so pray he did, as an excruciating pain shot down his left shoulder. Instantly, that pain was matched by the stabbing sensation in his right leg, which somehow curled itself underneath him as he fell. His wife had gone to town for a spell, and she'd be gone probably most of the afternoon. And Timmy was at school, so there was no use calling for help unless, of course, he could make it to the door to greet his answered prayer. "Just a minute," the petrified pastor moaned as he inched his way toward the front door, crawling on the one leg that still tried to work. With all the strength he possessed, he pulled himself up and his trembling hand turned the doorknob, allowing him to feast his eyes at last on his answer to prayer. The door inched open. And there on the front porch, bundled up enough to pass for Eric the Eskimo, stood little Bobby Simpson, the 12-year-old grandson of the druggist deacon. "Oh, it's you," the pastor groaned insensitively. "You were expecting maybe Robert Redford," the lad retorted. "I've come to talk to you about a problem," the inquisitive boy went on. "What are you doing on the floor, preacher? How come there's blood on your face? You been in a fight?" "Wow, wait till I tell the guys that our peace-loving pastor just lost round two of the Olympics." Pastor Tom's patience was wearing thin, and when an explosion seemed imminent, the only question was when. "Bobby," he quietly responded, "it isn't that I'm not glad to see you, it's just that I was expecting someone else. And I haven't been in a fight. I fell on Timmy's roller skate running to answer the door. Now come in before I add frostbite to my growing list of ailments." Meanwhile, little Bobby was struggling to keep a straight face. His 12-year-old mind had already conjured up a headline for the junior high newspaper, "Clumsy Clergy Crashes." Underneath it, it wasn't fate, it was Timmy's skate. Fortunately, he kept all this to himself and determined that to offer to aid the ailing preacher at the moment might be in better taste. And Pastor Tom, meanwhile, wouldn't have wanted his mind read either. He was, you might say, murmuring to God over this apparent lapse in God's thinking and the way he, quote, mishandled the situation. He was thinking, "Thanks a bunch, God. I pray for a miracle and you send me the world's greatest pest. While I'm headed for the door, you send me to the floor. Thanks a bunch, God. Thanks a bunch." Wisely, the pastor kept his murmuring between himself and God, and soon little Bobby was inside and beginning to unwrap the layers of protective coating his mother had wrapped him in. The pastor crawled up on the sofa and surveyed the state of his body. Shoulder was a nasty sprain, but the leg, he surmised was no longer connected and in one piece. Poor Tom. He played defensive tackle for 4 years in high school, 4 years in college, and never broken a bone. And now a $10 skate had done what a 300-pound lineman couldn't do. "Bobby," the pastor said in a voice that was now beginning to quiver, "Bobby, you better call old Doc Forsythe for me. I think I'm the possessor of a broken leg." Bobby stood in a state of semi-paralysis. His jaw dropped, his eyes bugged, his brain went into neutral. Racing through his 12-year-old mind was the fact that this startling turn of events had turned him into a potential hero. I mean, he'd come to the parson for advice, and now here he was, Dr. Kildare, standing in front of his ailing counselor, no one else within miles, or at least yards, who could help. What hadn't yet crowded into his Superman serial was that was reeling through his imagination was the fact that it was his unexpected knock on the door that had set the stage for this modern medical scenario. Bobby, the pastor, pleaded in an amazing calm voice, "Call the doctor, please." Suddenly, something snapped in Bobby's mind. He bolted from his trance, and apparently still in his subconscious Superman suit, he ran for the phone as though only many seconds separated the parson from eternity. A straight line being the shortest distance between two points, Bobby charged toward the receiver and never saw the overturned table that had already claimed one's victim's shoulder only minutes before. Well, you can imagine the rest. Tripping over the table leg in his enthusiasm, this gawky preteen flew across the room and landed, you guessed it, on Pastor Tom's leg. Not the one that still worked, mind you, but the one that already stood as a challenge to medical science. And though little Bobby only weighed 72 pounds soaking wet, at this particular time, as he came crashing down for a three-point landing on the preacher's dislocated limb, no opposing linebacker had ever made such an impression. "Oh, dear Lord," the parson muttered, tears streaming down his face. "Oh, dear Lord, no." But it was as if the Lord had answered, "Yes, Tom, yes." For Bobby couldn't have possibly landed with all the space in that room on that particular leg had it not been in God's plan. Bobby's hero image diminished quickly as Super Medic turned into Mr. Misfit, and he scrambled to his feet, unfortunately placing his weight to regain his balance, you guessed it, on the near-paralyzed parson's rapidly swelling knee. Soon the lad, now frightened out of his wits, had found the telephone, dialed the doc, and screamed frantically at the female voice on the other end, "Help, help, come quick, pastor's busted his leg, come quick." The second reality hit again. It was Nurse Stephanie on the other end of the phone. The smileless wonder, they called her. "She has all the compassion of a dinosaur with the personality to match," was the way his daddy had described her. "Calm down, son," the voice came back in tones that sent icicles through the receiver. "Doctor's delivering the Thorndale baby. He'll be tied up for a spell." "Just where is this ailing preacher?" she asked in computer-like tones. "I'll send doctor after the baby's been born." "And who might this be calling?" she asked in a demanding voice as if she were probing to see if it was a prank. "This is Bobby Simpson," he said abruptly. "The parson's at his house and he hurts bad, and you just tell that baby to get a move on." By now, Bobby was screaming as he slammed the receiver down with all his might, which wouldn't have been so bad if he hadn't missed the phone. But he did. And as the telephone collided with Miss Simpson's newly varnished desk, it became apparent that the freshly gouged hole in the top of the desk would be rivaled only by the broken lamp, which went careening to the same hardwood floor that already had a leg to its credit. There was a blinding flash as the bulb exploded, but no fire occurred, and as the parson's mind raced hurriedly through the first few chapters of Job, the phrase, "while they were yet speaking," kept rushing through his mind. What could God be punishing him for, he wondered. He had prayed for a man who was on fire for God, and God had nearly set fire to his house. Not to mention that when he came to preaching, he wouldn't have a leg to stand on for a while. "Well, sit down, Bobby. Guess we'll have to wait a while," the preacher urged. It was partly his pastor's heart surfacing, wanting to comfort the youngster, but it was partly he figured the lad could do less damage sitting still than turned loose as a helper. So Bobby crawled, this time carefully, upon the sofa next to the preacher, and Reverend Tom, forgetting the intensity of his pain momentarily, turned to the boy and said, "You came here to talk to me about something." "Well, here we are. Neither one of us is going anywhere." The pastor, even in his pain, began to notice the lad's countenance fall, and he remembered why he'd come in the first place. "Ah, you don't feel like talking now," Bobby half-heartedly argued, shuffling his muddy feet back and forth on Mrs. Thompson's newly covered sofa. By now, the Reverend realized something was really weighing on this lad's heart to make him trudge 2 miles through the snow to talk to a preacher. "Oh, I'm fine, Bobby," the parson assured him, bending the truth. "Tell me what's troubling you." Tears began forming in Bobby's eyes, and he was having trouble finding words to say, a problem not usually associated with Bobby Simpson. It's just that, Bobby tried to say, it's just that, remember last Sunday when you were talking about Nicodemus and about how he was big and important and everything, and how he came to Jesus one night and everything? Bobby melted his words together without so much as taking a breath. Remember? Yes, I remember, Reverend Thompson answered softly, and now he was beginning to see why the lad had come. And you said Jesus had told him to be born over? Bobby went on. The pastor remembered every word. He prayed over every word. But he seemed to be preaching to lifeless forms whose only response was to glance at their watches. I remember, the pastor said, Billy, go on. Well, you told us that being born over was asking Jesus to come into your heart and take over your life and stuff like that, Bobby went on. By now, tears were forming a path across his cheeks and down his wrinkled denim shirt. You said Jesus took our place on that cross and he died in our place because we were like cut off from God. That's what you said. And you said now he's waiting to come in and clean up our lives and make us new people, living inside of us. Isn't that what you said? Yes, Bobby, that's what I said. Have you ever done that? The pastor responded. No, I haven't, Bobby sobbed, and you were right. You said until Jesus comes into our hearts, we can come to church and everything, but we can't be happy because we haven't had our sins forgiven. We're cut off from God. Reverend Thompson, I'm a sinner, Bobby almost shouted. I've done all sorts of things God asked me not to, like when I stole the Barton's cat and stuffed it in the incinerator. Pastor looked away for a moment to hide a faint smile. And when I sprayed Ms. Nelson's fur coat with itching powder. And when I lied to Mom and Dad about the 35 cookies I snitched from the boxes you packed for poor folks last Christmas, the pastor's smile faded. And every time I try to say my prayers, I feel all dirty, and now I know why. Why, Bobby, the pastor asked, why? Because I'm not a Christian, Bobby blurted out. I never been, you know, born over. Born again, the pastor caught himself saying, as if the words mattered. Well, what do I do, Bobby began pleading with the preacher. What do I do? The little boy's childlike honesty was the most refreshing breath of fresh air that this pastor had experienced since he came to Forest Grove 2 years before. And a passage of scripture from Matthew chapter 18 became riveted in his mind where Jesus had called a little child and set him in the midst of them and said, Verily I say unto you, except you be converted and become as little children, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Most beautifully spiritual words he had heard in Forest Grove had just come from the lips of a 12-year-old boy. They were, What do I do? Softly, Reverend Thompson answered, You get down on your knees, Bobby, and tell God what you just told me. Tell him you're sorry about the Barton's cap and Ms. Norton's coat and the cookies you stole. Tell him you're sorry for all the things you've ever done that didn't make him happy. Tell God you know he died in your place for you. Tell him you want to become a Christian. Ask him to come into your heart right now. Bobby, in that instant, heaven will come down and touch earth, and that load of guilt you've been carrying will vanish with the wind of God's Spirit as it sweeps through your life, and Jesus will come and live in you. You won't be able to see him, but he'll be there. And once he's there, he'll never leave you. He'll never forsake you. Why don't you ask him in right now, Bobby? I promise you, you'll never be the same. Little Bobby slid to the floor in a singular motion. In a matter of seconds, he was praying, head down, tears flowing into the cushion of that newly covered sofa, but tears the Reverend knew gave that sofa a beauty no upholsterer could ever create, the beauty of a life being born again. Bobby prayed silently, but the hands of conviction were so evident that the thought of what God might have in mind for his life became both awesome and exciting to this pastor. As the lad prayed, the Reverend could almost see the second Christ came into his life. Tears began to stop. Peaceful calm settled on him. The corners of his mouth turned upward as though he were smiling now, as though someone had lifted a very heavy load from his shoulders, a load he'd been carrying for quite a while. Now you could tell he was no longer addressing Gaz as judge. The glow began to demonstrate he was talking to his best friend. The comforter had come to take up residence in little Bobby Simpson. The pastor's words were prophetic. He would never be the same again. When Bobby rose to his feet, his eyes sparkled like jewels of eternity. And before he spoke a word, he crawled over to where the pastor was sitting, this time being super sensitive about avoiding contact with his throbbing limb. And throwing his arms around the preacher's neck, he said, "He came in, just like you said. Jesus came in. I'm a Christian now." And even though the hugging 12-year-old had his arms resting clearly on that badly wounded shoulder, the parson felt no pain. You see, that kind of joy supersedes pain. And suddenly a feeling of awesomeness gripped this Tom Thompson. He prayed for one man who'd be sold out for God. He glanced down at the chubby face of this 12-year-old newborn babe and shouted in his spirit, "Oh, dear God, thank you. Your ways are so much higher than ours." The next hour was amazing. Here sat a 31-year-old preacher with a broken leg, a sprained shoulder, dried blood all over his face from a nasty cut, and the 12-year-old grandson of the pillar of the church, and they were having the most exciting conversation about the Christian life you've ever heard. They talked about why and how you pray. They talked about how to study the Bible, how to memorize, how to tell others what has happened to you. They talked about how to be forgiven when you make a mistake. This lad's spiritual hunger was insatiable, his understanding incredible, but then that's no wonder, Pastor thought, his God is supernatural. They talked about how God had been working in his life to bring him to this moment, and they were just discussing how the angels in heaven were rejoicing that Bobby Simpson had been born again, or born over, as Bobby still put it, when another knock, knock, knock came on the door. Bobby ran and opened it, and in came a room full of blowing snow. And old Doc Forsythe at last. "Sorry it took me so long, Pastor," said the grim but highly efficient sole possessor of medical knowledge in Forest Grove. "Thelma Thorndale up and had twins," he beamed, quite proud of his accomplishment. "Now what's happened to you? This place looks like Hiroshima after the bomb fell." Quick examination revealed the exact diagnosis the Reverend had so subjectively made a few hours before. Shoulder sprain, bad. Legs plumb busted. "You must be in all kinds of pain, huh?" Just then it dawned on Tom. The pain. He'd been so engrossed in Bobby's encounter with God, he'd forgotten to hurt. "Doc, to be honest," Tom proceeded cautiously, "I haven't felt a thing. While we were waiting for you to come, little Bobby here asked Jesus to come into his heart." Tom looked intently for Doc's response. You see, salvation had not been a widely discussed topic at the Forest Grove Church. They liked to assume everybody was a Christian who came to church and had been baptized. And after his Nicodemus sermon last Sunday, the two of the deacons, including Bobby's grandpa, had admonished him to keep his evangelism, as they called it, for the Sunday school story time. "You might confuse some of our old-timers or even anger them with this born-again stuff," they argued. So Tom watched the doctor's eyes intently. You see, he knew that Bobby would be traveling in hostile territory when he began to share his newfound faith. "That's so," Doc responded without looking up from his stint with the splint. "That's so. Now maybe he'll stop playing his music so loud the missus can't sleep," he replied quite seriously. The doc, you see, lived next door to Bobby's folks in Bobby's bedroom, which often sounded to the doctor like an unbearable invasion from Mars, had become quite a bone of contention. And Bobby's response to their complaints had only been to let the decibels double in defiance. "I'm sorry, sir, about the music," Bobby quietly answered. "Forgive me. I won't play it loud again, ever. I wasn't being considerate." All at once, the old medic, who prided himself in being tough as nails, was taken by surprise. He looked down, discovered his left hand was wrapping his right thumb into the reverend's bandage, the kind of thing Doc Forsythe didn't do. And out of the corner of his eye, Tom saw the crusty old doctor remove the thumb and wipe what he thought just might have been a tear from his eye. You ever been born over? Bobby asked impulsively but politely. You ever asked Jesus into your life? Pastor Tom jerked uncontrollably at the bluntness of Bobby's question. Out of the mouth of babes, he thought. Can't say as I have, Bobby, the doctor answered. Can't say as I have. The next few seconds were about 3 hours long, and the petrified pastor waited to see what would happen next. Your whole life will be changed, Bobby blurted out, repeating word for word what the parson had just said to him. Meanwhile, Pastor Tom was half embarrassed at the doc's dilemma and half overwhelmed at the boldness of this young man, just under 2 hours old in Christ. Lord, send me one whose heart beats only for you, he prayed. And now, like Jonah, he wasn't sure he could handle the blessing. Doctor laid down his adhesive tape and scissors and put his crumpled black bag back on the floor, and he looked at Bobby head on, eye to eye. Lord, don't let him discourage the boy, Tom was praying frantically, and even that prayer he didn't have the faith to believe. Bobby, tired old man, said, there was an eternal pause. Bobby, I believe you're right. I haven't slept since that message last Sunday about Nicodemus. I've been a member of Forest Grove Church for 34 years. But I'm not a Christian. The room became so still you could feel the snowflakes as they floated against the windowsill. And Pastor Tom, at least momentarily, was in the same state of frozen awe that had paralyzed Bobby over the broken limb. Fortunately, the doctor went on, oblivious to Tom's mental lapse. All week long, I've been thinking about it, the doc continued. I'm about as religious as anybody in Forest Grove. Never miss a service. Give as much as anybody. Even help pay for the pipe organ. Don't drink much or cuss much. Love my wife. Love my kids. But when you start talking about having Jesus walk with you and live with you and lead you and be your best friend and about all that peace in your heart, I don't have that. Never have. Pastor, you want to know something? The doctor riveted his eyes on Tom's. What? The pastor replied, still overwhelmed. I need to be born over myself, like Bobby here. I think God let you break your leg for a reason, Bob quietly said to the parson. I think angels are fixing to have choir practice again. And in those next few minutes, heaven came down to Farm Road 43 outside of Forest Grove for the second time in 3 hours. And the angels in heaven, along with a newborn 12-year-old, a 60-year-old doctor, and an overwhelmed 31-year-old preacher with a broken leg, joined in singing anthems of praise to a God who still works miracles. The following week in Forest Grove was not an average week. The word was out. Bobby Simpson got saved, whatever that was. Doc Forsyth got religion, whatever that meant, and Reverend Thompson broke his leg in the process. Rumor had it some wild religious experience occurred, and the result was two souls and a busted limb. And since skepticism was the cardinal mood in this town of doubting Thomas's, phone wires burned with sarcasm, and the real question was, what's Grandpa Billy going to do about these strange goings-on? They knew if they brought in an outsider, the pastor was from 200 miles away, you see. Something was bound to happen, and sure enough. Pastor Tom, meanwhile, was undaunted. He was clinging to a promise he'd heard in seminary and from Philippians that said that he that began a good work in you will complete it. He prayed for one man, seeing that God let him break his leg to give him two. So Tom began meeting every day with these two new Christians in his flock. Every morning he'd meet for breakfast with old Doc Forsythe. Why, they'd share, and they'd study, and they'd laugh, and they'd pray. You see, old Doc already knew a lot about the Bible. Now, all of a sudden, he was learning a lot about its author. And every afternoon after school, little Bobby would wade through the ice and snow, school books over his shoulder, Bible under his arm, all the way to the pastor's house, where this excited parson would teach his newborn friend about the Bible. And this excited 12-year-old would share how Jesus helped him through the day and tell him how one by one he'd been sharing with his classmates what happened in his life. Most of them came to him. They want to know why he smiles so much now. They want to know why he seems so encouraged about love. They want to know what had happened to his violent temper. They wanted to know where his uncontrollable sarcasm went and his big man on the campus attitude. Not everybody understood, but everyone knew something had happened to Bobby. Meanwhile, Doc's life was changing too. His gruffness had given way to a more sensitive spirit. His impatience was dissolving in an ocean of love, and he was making time to tell every patient that came in. He had a captive audience, he used to say. He'd tell them how he could treat their bodies, but he'd just met someone who could treat what was really ailing them. And then with a twinkle in his eye, he'd say something like, "Miss Jones, I can help you with your rheumatism, but only Jesus can help your heart problem." And then a stunned Mrs. Jones recovered and realized she didn't mean her physical heart. She'd stop and listen to what he had to say. Meanwhile, at the church house, there was a strange sense of division taking place. On the one hand, there was excitement being generated over the obvious change in Bobby and Doc Forsythe, and the newfound interest in religion being stirred up as kids came home from school asking their folks what it meant to be born over. And from having folks come home from the doctor's office being treated for the flu, asking about his great physician that the doc had been telling them about. The result was a new boldness in Tom's preaching. Nearly every Sunday some mention was made of this new birth thing, and he's even talking about heaven and hell, something that hadn't happened in Forest Grove for about a generation. So on the one hand, the spiritual temperature was rising as fast as the thermometer was dropping, but on the other hand, there was an underground revolt in Forest Grove about the unsolicited unsettling of the status quo. And Susie Sterling, the switchboard operator, whom folks figured knew almost as much as God about the goings-on in Forest Grove, told her best friend Pastor Tom's days at the old Stern Church could be counted on fingers and toes. "Why, she overheard, and don't tell a soul," she said, "or I'll kill you. Grandpa Billy was telling the bishop up in Northton that either denomination reached out and recalled this heretic or the Forest Grove deacons were going to boot him out of town." And the words Grandpa Billy used, Susie blushed, weren't all that religious. So as the Christmas season approached, there was a mixture of joy and apprehension in this tiny, snow-covered village. Christmas lights flashed their seasonal signals in every shop in town. The Regal restaurant set up its moth-eaten artificial tree on the counter, and Billy's daddy fussed over how much more old man Richardson was charging for Christmas lights. School play was the same as every year, but this year Bobby Simpson played Joseph, and everyone said he brought a spirit of realism to the part they'd never seen before. Meanwhile, Grandpa Billy plugged in the same string of lights he'd used since his third year as a druggist, and a couple of them even worked. He never bothered to take them down anymore. "Just plug them in on the 15th, turn them off on 26th, he mumbled. Every year should have been their last. Bobby once remarked that if the fire department didn't condemn the drugstore, they ought to at least condemn that string of lights. But you see, the fire marshal was Bill Ben Beasley, and he wasn't going to condemn anything belonging to Grandpa. He was Grandpa's domino partner. Domino partners stick together. So you see, for Forest Grove, it was Christmas on the outside for many, Christmas on the inside for a few. But as the pages of December approached the 20s, it was evident that however mundane the holidays had been in years past, this Christmas would be anything but commonplace. For Grandpa Billy had up and mailed the Pastor Tom and the whole flock a mimeograph letter calling a church business meeting for, you guessed it, Christmas Day. He'd refused to answer the pastor's phone calls, canceled the December deacon's meeting, and hadn't shown his face in church since Pastor broke his leg and grandson met the Lord. And now, in his usually vindictive manner, he planned to bring Forest Grove Church back to what he called a regular kind of church and put an end once and for all to this emotional kind of religion that talked about being born over and all that stuff. Pastor Tom finally took his phone off the hook on Christmas Eve. The lines were almost burned to a crisp, and lines were forming that he knew would shatter that little fellowship forever. He purposed in his heart, though, that it mustn't ruin Christmas for Timmy. So at 6 a.m., Tom plugged in the lights on their little tree, called Timmy and his wife, Ellen, around him, and read the Christmas story. It had been a long night for Tom and Ellen. They hadn't slept much. They'd prayed nearly all night. "Father, make them one as you are one," they quoted Jesus as they prayed. Timmy opened his presents that Christmas morning. He could sense a little strangeness in the air, but that was overcome with the presence of a tiny tot train that he had asked for all year long. Then Tom and Ellen opened their gifts and their cards, the way it was always their custom. And Tom saved till last a tiny little box that appeared from nowhere under the tree with his name on it. Opening it, he found a beautiful silver ring with a cross on it and a neatly printed card that read, "To the one who led me into the kingdom, even on a broken leg, I love you, Bobby." Tears began to form in the pastor's eyes, and a new sense of purpose welled up within him. It is worth it, he thought. Church house had never been so packed. Little children were being shoved into the nursery room, dragging their Christmas toys behind them. People were lining up on either side of the aisle, depending on whether they were for the pastor or against the pastor. And daggers crossed the aisle as old friends were now becoming new enemies. And all of this on Christmas Day. 10 till 3, the organ began playing. "The church's one foundation is Jesus Christ, her Lord, and Rock of Ages cleft for me." With the music, the mood shifted from one that would characterize a call to battle to more of a funeral-like atmosphere, and everyone expected the preacher to be announced dead on arrival. But at 2:59, Pastor Tom and Ellen, very much alive, slipped into the side door and took their seats. You could see that Ellen had been crying. Tom looked hurt, but at peace. 3:00, the organ stopped. From out of the side door, down the winding stairs into the pulpit, came the man whose word has always been final in Forest Grove. Grandpa Billy had his head down as he walked to the pulpit, so no one could see just how wrought with anger he might be. But you could see that his face was red. For a moment, the pastor thought it couldn't be that. Grandpa began to speak, and an eerie silence took control of the audience. "Friends and fellow members of Forest Grove Church," he began, "I've called this meeting to talk to you about the kinds of things been going on here in these past 6 weeks, and to let you know that I know who's responsible. People have been making religion their whole life, claiming they personally met Jesus. Claiming been born over, as my grandson calls it. Claiming they weren't Christians before, even though they'd been baptized. Claiming Jesus had come into their hearts. That's what's been going on," Grandpa said, "and he's the man responsible for it." With that, he pointed a neural finger directly at the young parson, who looked him straight in the eye, wounded, but not angry. "I have here in my hand," Grandpa went on, "a letter of resignation for one Pastor Thomas E. Thomas, stating that effective tonight, December 25th, he hereby resigns as pastor of Forest Grove Church, and all it lacks is his signature, and I bought this paper for him to sign in all our presence." Angry murmurs spread through the congregation. "But," Grandpa's voice boomed now, "but I have a better idea. Bobby, you come here. Tell these folks my new plan." Little Bobby jumped up from his pew, his face filled with excitement. Now the congregation is petrified on both sides of the aisle. Bobby walked to the pulpit, stood beside his grandpa, and reaching up to the pulpit, he took the pastor's letter of resignation and held it up. And then he tore it in a million pieces. Now a fly would have sounded like an airplane. Not a soul dared to breathe. Then as a huge grin covered his face of the old deacon, Bobby shrieked into the microphone, "Merry Christmas! My grandpa got born over! My grandpa got born over on Christmas Day." Tears began to run down the cheeks of the old man no one ever thought could cry. And he began to tell the folks how on Christmas Eve he began to wrestle with something in his soul. What if that pastor's right, he thought? What if what's happened to Bobby's real? What about old Doc Forsythe? He's a different guy. "So I got my Bible," the old man chuckled, "and I'm here to confess I carry it every Sunday, but I never read it. But I found my Bible and I began to read the Gospel of John. All night long I read it, over and over, never went to sleep. Just as I was convinced that I had to decide one way or t'other, the doorbell rang. It was my little grandson, Bobby, here at 5:30 on Christmas morning. He'd walked all the way over to tell me he loved me, and he wanted me to know the joy God had given him. So we got down and prayed, He showed me how to ask Jesus into my heart. And I did. God took and lifted a load off my shoulders I've been carrying for 50 years. I'm a Christian now, he shouted. Jesus is in my heart. That's what's been happening in Forest Grove, he grinned, and this man is responsible. And I praise God for him. Then the old gent, with a gentleness never before seen on his face, turned to the congregation and said, "Dear friends, how many of you are like me? Full of religion, active in church, pious on the outside, but miserable and empty in here. Don't leave here that away," he said. "For the first time in my life, I'm living. I've been born over on Christmas Day. Today's my birthday. Maybe it'll be yours." Service lasted for 2 hours. No one bothered to count the number of people who stood up and said, "I want Jesus to come into my life too." No one took records of the folks who ran across the aisle and hugged their friends and asked forgiveness. No one had to take records. God kept a good account. No one counted the dry eyes as little Bobby Simpson gave his testimony. No one had to. There were none. No one ever had to count the vote for removing the pastor either. There was none. No one had to write it down. Because the little town of Forest Grove now marks its calendar December 25th, the day that Jesus was born, the day that Grandpa was born, and in a parenthesis, the day a little church and a little town came alive with Jesus. Been 3 years now since the day that Grandpa was born. Winters in Forest Grove are still cold, and sheets of ice still wrap their fingers around this tiny town. Farms still shut down, and little groups still huddle like little families around pot-bellied stoves for warmth. There's a different kind of warmth in Forest Grove. Why, truckers up the highway say they'll take the detour down Highway 619 just to stop there. Folks are friendly there, they'll say. Folks are different in Forest Grove. You get a feeling there you don't feel anywhere else. Why they're adding on to the church, I hear. Seems the old one won't hold the crowds anymore. Oh, yeah, they'll say, "If you ever go to Forest Grove, be sure to stop at Grandpa Billy's drugstore. Right in the middle of town, especially neat at Christmas time. It's all been repainted, and a brand new Christmas tree with brand new lights stands right in the middle of the store. And you can't miss Grandpa. He's got a smile that stretches all the way to Red Rock County. And every Christmas, he has a big party at his place. Not just a Christmas party, a birthday party. And after everybody's sung Christmas carols, they'll sing Happy Birthday to Jesus, and then Happy Birthday to Grandpa. And they just keep singing, verse after verse, for all the people who've gone and been born over in Forest Grove. You stop there if you can. They'll most likely ask you if Jesus is in your heart, too. They really want to know. Because they want you to celebrate more than Christmas. They want you to celebrate personally the day that Grandpa was born. They know it just could be the day that you were born as well.